Welcome to the Pathfinder Podcast, brought to you by Shillington, where we talk to creators about how they navigated their design careers from the early beginnings up until now, and the twists and turns along the way. I'm Jimmy Muldoon, designer and teacher at Shillington's New York campus. Glad you could join us.
So today we have Ben Crick, who is a fellow Australian graphic designer who is a partner and creative director at Collins in San Francisco. He's worked on brands such as Spotify, MailChimp, Instagram, Nike, and his work has been recognized internationally. Ben, thanks so much for joining us for our first Pathfinders Q&A.
Pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me.
Yeah.
Let's do it.
So, again, I've got a bunch of questions that have come directly from the Shillington grads, but I kind of wanted to start with this question about what was your first introduction to design?
It's really bizarre. So, like, I had this experience, and then in retrospect, kind of a lot of things in my life fell into place. So I didn't know I wanted to be a graphic designer, more or less, until I ended up in a university degree studying graphic design and had this moment where I was like, oh shit, this is like something you can get paid for. I think a lot of people have a similar experience, but like in high school, my best subjects were design and economics. Mm-hmm. And design was like in Australia what we'd call a bludge course. It was like just like not a real, like, it was like the course people did to not like work that hard, and I really enjoyed it, but it never felt like a serious career opportunity. And then you had all the normal ones and economics and all the systemic thinking and stuff. I thought that was really interesting and I did quite well at it. And so coming out of school, I sort of applied for a bunch of economics courses, and I applied for one graphic design course, which ironically, based on the Australian system, you know, how hard it is to get into courses depends on how popular they are. I don't know if that's similar elsewhere, and especially in the US, which is crazy. But ironically, that was the harder course to get into. So I put that on there, but I didn't really think it was going to happen. Yeah. I left Australia and went to Canada for a year with some mates of mine. We became snowboard instructors. That was a different life, but did that, kind of forgot all about school and just went off to have a good time. And I got my scores back on a payphone in a hostel, and I got into the design course. And I was like, great, I'll do with that in a year. And then I basically came back, started the course. So I took a gap year. I had that epiphany moment where I was like sitting in all these lectures, and my understanding of what it meant to be an adult and have a career was like, you know, spreadsheets and cubicles. And I mean, I didn't have that good of an idea, honestly. I hadn't thought that far ahead, but. And I got into this thing, and it was all like mark making and like happy accidents and moving letters closer and further away from each other. And I was like, I can't believe this is a fucking thing you could do. And so that was it. I fell in love, you know? And ever since then, it's just been kind of like exploring that whole industry more. Mm. And I think there's some So the point I was making earlier is like, once I figured that out and I got into it, and you know, I found my motivation, I started like doing okay in like these courses, I like looking back on my life started to realize how much aesthetics and design had played a role in decisions I'd made in the past that I had like been unaware of. So like, you know, I used to like pick skateboards and snowboards because of the graphics, and I'd buy like the wrong size and totally the wrong kit because I wanted the one that looked good. Like my whole music taste was driven by album covers and not even by the music. I would just buy the ones that looked cool, like just everything. You know, I was always like aesthetically motivated and never realized that that was a thing until I got into design. And I actually think I try to remember that often as a designer, because that's my, now that I'm saturated in design and I'm so aware of like, you know, it's like watching a magician for the first time versus being a magician and knowing how all the tricks are done. I try to remember what it's like, or use that experience to remember what it's like, because I think that's really important, because that's how most people experience design. But anyway, we'll come back to that. But that's my very long, short story about getting into design. It was a complete accident, and I love it here.
And now you're a magician.
Now I'm a visual magician.
Yeah. So again, I'm just going to then kind of lead into these graduates. Jacqueline from New York, she is asking, you know, when it comes to presenting and pitching work to a client, what skills have you grown or learnt in to help it come to communicating the concept to a person outside of the design world?
Yeah, I mean, that point I just made, I think, is super important. I think that as you're becoming a designer, and we all experience this, you find your community, you become saturated in it, you are focused on building your craft, getting better at your skill, bringing your ideas to life. Mm. And there's all these fame, I can't remember, might have been Paul Scher, or there's a great quote that's like, one of the most painful things in learning design and is that your mechanical skill doesn't match your conceptual ability. So you can see a solution, but you can't quite realize it yet because you haven't kind of developed those mechanical skills. So you spend a lot of time working on those kinds of things. Mm. I think, so to that earlier point, I think the most important thing to me is like recognizing that as a designer, you have to embrace two personalities. One is the craftsperson who cares about kerning, who cares about like all the details. And the other is stepping outside of yourself into the shoes of the average everyday person walking down the street and being able to judge your work from the perspective of a casual observer who has no idea about the mechanics of how you made it work. And even more so, trying to step into your client's shoes who, you know, within their life, you are a means to an end and you have to understand what end they're trying to achieve through design and help frame. And so all of that is to say that allows you to help frame your work and all the craftsmanship you've done through their eyes and in how it helps them achieve their goal.
Mm.
And so a lot of that is like, I don't know. It's not like, it's not salesmanship, which is, I think, what a lot of designers start to feel kind of like icky when they feel like they're, but it's more about like, you can talk about craft, you can talk about the color you've chosen or the typeface you've chosen, but you should always attach it to an outcome that is relevant to the client and not just get stuck on, you know, I chose this typeface because it was really beautiful. It has these lovely curves and so on and so forth. It's like, that's great. But the question to ask yourself and that they will be asking is to what end? So it supports this notion, my audience is going to like it because of these reasons, it's different from the competition in these ways. Color is a really easy example of this. It's like, we chose yellow because it's optimistic and it has like the semiotics of yellow are really optimistic and positive. It's also different from your competitors. Like, you know, the more you can recognize and frame the decisions you've made through the whoever you're working with's lens of success, the better you're going to be.
Mm.
And that doesn't mean you can't be like a fantastic designer who cares about the details of craft. You just have to recognize who your audience is.
Mm.
They don't understand. Like, it's like going to like a mechanic and them try, like you go there because you're like, my car's broken, I need it to work again. And if they start talking to you about the circumference of the spark plugs, you just like glaze over. You're like, I know you care about this, but I don't, it's not relevant to me and what I'm trying to achieve. And so you need to figure out how to coexist with your craft and someone else's goals,
mm.
I would say.
Yeah. And kind of a lot of happening, you know, sounds like for you, it's very much that you have a reason for everything. And that's such a huge thing as a designer is like, you can't just say, oh, I like these colors. As you said before, there has to be a reason. It has to connect in with what they're trying to achieve. And if there's a disconnect there.
Yeah, that's when you're going to get dinged. And when you're, and also honestly, like when, as a designer, it's like when you start to see, you know, designers are problem solvers and there's a difference between decorating and solving problems.
Mm.
And that's just something to be aware of.
Mm.
You shouldn't cave and just allow the client to dictate everything because they're not a professional in the same way. Go back to the mechanic metaphor. Like if you were hovering over their shoulder being like, no, plug that in there. It's like, you have no right being in that situation,
mm.
but you are part of achieving a goal that's not just yours. And I think that's something that especially earlier in your career, people recognize less because they're really looking at projects through the lens of how does this allow me to improve my craft and do the kind of work I want to do? And they tend to forget that, you know, graphic design at least in my specialty, like branding, is a symbiotic experience. I can't do it without a client. So to be like, okay, you're writing me a check so I can do whatever I want is like really self-serving and kind of like not a, anyway. I think the other thing I'll add to that is like find ways to bring the, like co-create. So how do you involve the client, give them moments to be part of the process so that they have skin in the game, so that they sometimes have the illusion of choice, sometimes actually have choice. But if they see themselves in the outcome, they are far more likely to approve it and go forward with it than if you just kind of like do a big reveal and you're like, this is what you need. And they're like, okay. So
yeah,
that one's harder because it can be difficult and requires a lot of patience sometimes because you're dealing with someone who has no idea. You have to kind of coach them. But.
Yeah. Yeah. Coaching and educating them about what branding is and back into that.
Right.
Yeah. Deanna from New York, she's got two questions here. Is the stage of hating your own work permanent? Is that a permanent part of the creative process, or does that kind of go away with time and experience?
I've spent years trying to diagnose this in the back of my head. It's a great question. I think there's like three parts to the answer, basically. I think that you will, like, as the person making it, you will always see the compromises in the work. So in that sense, sort of no, like you will see the places where your skill reached its limit and didn't quite meet the idea or the expectation you have. That thing will go away as your skill improves. Seeing the compromises in the work will never, because you know, anything that you're intimately familiar with is not going to be as exciting as something that you see net new, right? Like if you saw your own work and you hadn't been the one who made it, it would be way more exciting to you than being a part of the process and experiencing all the moments where it didn't quite work, or looking at it and being like, oh, I just wish I've never felt like I quite solved this issue, or that curve was a little bit wrong, or I had this color, but then the client wanted that color and I just had to tweak it. You know, you'll always see those compromises, and that will just color the way you look at your work in a way that someone who comes at it from like fresh eyes, all they see is the outcome, and they're not, you know, intimately familiar with every choice you made. So, you know, in that respect, like, yes, I think there will always, every good designer I've ever worked with is dissatisfied with their work. And I think that one thing to take away from that is a lot of it is an illusion, especially as you get more experience. Like, your work is good, you just have been looking at it too long. And two is a certain level of dissatisfaction is healthy. It's the thing that motivates most designers. If you think your work is great, why would you ever get better? So the constant pursuit of improvement of your work, of your craft, of how you present, all of that comes from a sense of dissatisfaction that your work hasn't quite gotten to the level that you think it should. And so I guess what I would flip that is like dissatisfaction with the way things are and the vision to see that they could be better is a superpower that exists in a lot of designers. And I would try to use it as fuel rather than allow it to be a kind of emotional anchor that makes you feel not that good.
And I think you're exactly right with that. Is like your goalposts change as you get better. Your view of great design or success evolves and changes. So when you do look back,
100%, absolutely. Yeah. It's one of those things where, you know, as just keep trying to improve. And like 5 years later, I guarantee you will look back and be like, oh my God, I didn't realize, but like all these things have just feel like they've magically improved over time. And that's just like in every aspect, that's just a pursuit of getting better. So
yeah, definitely. And Deanna also asked, what is the best approach to building connections in the industry when there's no in-person events to meet new people? It's hard to not come across as disingenuous when sending that random LinkedIn request.
Okay. So I think a really important here is meeting someone is not the same as making a connection. I think that if you are, I would spend less time thinking about, well, okay, so let me try to frame it this way. Real connections, the kind that are fruitful in pushing you forward, creating opportunities for you and things like that, those are built on mutual respect and an understanding. Collecting people on LinkedIn doesn't lead to better opportunities. And if your focus is on like trying to have a large network versus having connections of value, those are different things. And when it comes to making connections of value, that's that idea of like mutual respect is the key, right? You basically need to earn the connection, and that just comes from like, I don't know, focusing on things you can control, which is like make good work, be generous with your talent when you work with other people, look after the people around you, look for opportunities to improve yourself. And then I would say just be targeted with the connections you want to make. Like rather than trying to collect as many people as possible or like add people, strangers, like I have like 1,000 pending connections on LinkedIn. I don't like, it means nothing when someone connects. I don't email them. It's just like trading cards for adults. I don't know. So I just say, I maybe that's a pessimistic way of looking at it. But I guess what I would say is just like, figure out the places and the people who are really meaningful to you and put all your energy into trying to figure out how you can make a real connection with them, impress them, and start building that mutual respect rather than seeing like the notion of just, I have a lot of connections and that makes me valuable. And also just know that, I mean, there's no silver bullet to anything. Like you're not going to make a connection and that person is going to suddenly like elevate you on a platform to like ultra designer. It's strong connections is a result, not a, is usually a result of something rather than the inciting incident. And that result is usually like a lifelong journey or at least like change happens in years, you know. You do good work, you create a great portfolio, people notice it, they don't necessarily contact you, but now you're in the back of their minds. You might go do something else over here, now they've got two impressions of you. You meet that person at a party, they're like, oh, I saw those two things you did, those were really interesting. That's a connection. Now you have a great conversation with them, and then that person is like, oh, I saw this project and I'd really like to work with this person or that person. That's a connection.
Yeah.
Just kind of like firing emails off into the internet and saying like, hey, I'd love to chat, or I'm a new, you know, I think that will be less fruitful. I would focus on how you create value and then how you can demonstrate that value to people that you want to be connected with.
And it's playing the long game. You know, these things don't happen overnight at all. And it's just a matter of just being consistent with the work. And yeah, I think, yeah, that's incredible insight.
Brian, my boss, talks about this a lot. Sometimes people get confused between fame and mastery. And especially in America, I believe that, and my career has been motivated by essentially like focusing on the things I can control, personal progress, how can I improve and make sure that everything that I'm doing is as good as it possibly can be. And that just pays dividends in the long run. It won't feel like you won't get a lot of external validation at first, but you know, it will come eventually if you're getting better and you're creating that value.
Yeah, that's great. And we have one from Saparam in Melbourne. What do you like most about being a designer and what is challenging for you?
What do I like about being a designer? Honestly, it's part of that epiphany that I had at university. It's like creativity is at the heart of what makes humans unique. Pretty much like our ability, what are they, you know, if you like read about like human evolution, it's like our ability to work together and our ability and our imagination, our ability to envisage things that haven't existed yet and kind of play with those ideas in a way that we can form possible futures and then apply effort to that. That's ultimately creativity. And so it's just a fucking privilege to work in an industry that is so saturated in that idea. I think everyone is creative. People are creative with spreadsheets and what have you, but it's awesome to be in an industry that is literally motivated and its core value proposition is in figuring out how to improve things, whether that's a brand, whether that's whatever, you know, you get to sit down and look at anything in the world and say, how could I make this better by thinking of how it could be improved? So that's just an awesome lifelong thing. And I think part and parcel with that is that that means design is about learning always and getting better. And I think that the result is you tend to have a lot of really fucking awesome people in design who are super smart and empathetic and insightful and lovely. I just think, like, not only is it a great journey of self-improvement that's just like important in design, but you also just get to hang out with other people who are so interested and interesting because of that. And so I love those things. I think, like, the people I work with are my family, and it's fucking awesome to hang out with them on weekends and work with them every day of the week. So
Yeah, 100%. What is your advice for a graduate trying to land their first design job?
I think it would go back to some of the things we were talking about earlier. I think a good portfolio, like a beautiful portfolio, will get you in the door. The ability to articulate why the choices you've made are appropriate to the brief is the thing that will get you the job. So demonstrating your ability to explain the thought and the strategy and the reason behind the moves you've made becomes super important. So that's all that pretty much I would just leave it at that. It's as simple as that. Like, make sure your portfolio is beautiful, but make sure you know why you did everything and you know how to explain why you did everything to someone. And the why can't just be because it looked good. Even though that's good. I don't want to discount. I know that I don't want to, like, make people feel bad about, like, being aesthetically gifted, because, and I say this quite often, making something beautiful is solving a universal problem, right? If you make something visually attractive, that is solving a problem. But that's table stakes for design. It's like you are making something beautiful to what end? And so when you can explain that and explain how all of your decisions gather to create an outcome, then that's golden.
Yeah.
You do that, you'll nail it. And quite honestly, it's pretty rare. We get a lot of people come through and they've got great work. And then when we ask them to explain why they did it, they kind of look like deer in the headlights. So.
Yeah. Whitney in New York, she asks, where do you draw inspiration from, and do you have a favorite book, website, or social account?
Yes, but I don't want to, okay, I'll start with a little personal story and then I'll lead to a point. I feel like all my points are like mean, and I'm like a idealistic realist, I would say. So for me, my second boss bought me a Carol Martin's book. It's quite a famous one. At that time, I had no idea who Carol Martin's was. He bought it for me as like a reward. I think we went into a store and he was buying a bunch of books, and it was like a nice thank you for a project or something. Honestly, I can't remember. And I still have it just over here. In fact, I could run a, well, you're not filming this, so, but anyway, it's the Carol Martin's book called Printed Matter. And it just like cracked my head open, because I had the kind of Swiss style in my mind. That's, I had started doing like illustrative stuff, and then I got really into like the Swiss style, and I was really interested in like clean minimalism. And then Carol Martin's was just like beautiful, but broke all of the rules that I thought I knew existed. And it was like colorful and messy, but somehow made sense, like cacophonous. And so for me, that was like, that just opened my eyes to what design could be, and definitely cemented or planted a few seeds in my mind about like what kind of design I was interested in and wanted to pursue. So that was a really important one for me. It's a very famous book, so I'm certainly not like, it's not like a unique story to have found Printed Matter and thought it was good. It's like a classic great book. And if you've not seen it, I recommend you go out and buy it or find it. I think they've done a few reprints now. From there, what I will say is like, I think that finding your various like muses is a personal journey. And so I don't want to like tell people to go look at a bunch of books because they resonated with me and they might not resonate with you. I think you have to kind of go on that journey yourself. I think that we are in an age of echo chambers. And I think that when there's like popular references, you just get droves of people looking at them and they reinforce trends rather than promoting kind of like individual assessment of things, inputs, whatever. Mm. And so the one point I would say is like, go find your own and go hunt in a bookstore, try to get offline as much as you can, because if you're looking at a blog that someone else told you to look at, chances are thousands of other people are looking at that same blog and are interested in the same thing. And that doesn't really, it might be beautiful, but it's not really helping you find a different value proposition if you're looking at the same thing. So try to find other stuff.
Yeah.
Try to look at things that aren't even design. I don't know. Go to art museums. Like, just get outside the standard inputs, I would say.
Mm. Yeah. Isaiah from New York asks, is it important to develop a personal design style, or is versatility more desirable in a junior designer?
I would say versatility. I mean, definitely versatility, especially I think for two reasons, especially when you're like greener.
Mm.
Well, one, to all the points we've said before, graphic design is about symbiosis with achieving a goal that someone else has brought with you. Developing a personal style is more introspective, and that is more art than design. Design is commercial art. And I think there's a role for that, but I think that should, I think that you should focus on versatility first, because I think it makes you stronger conceptually. It also makes you much more useful to most design studios. You sell your ability to create appropriate solutions. There are some who have a really specific style and people hire them for that style, but that takes years of work to develop and hone that style. And it takes a long time to build an audience that is coming to you for that specific style. And even within that, you know, there's nuance in the way that you deploy that. I think a lot about like Kirpa Hosk has like manages to do like really great solutions, but they all have like a very Kirpa Hosk-y quality to them. And I mean, every designer, it's inescapable that your predilections won't emerge in your work at some point. It just like, you can't help but be fascinated by certain things and continue to explore the ways that they are interesting to you. Mm. And to, I guess the alternative to that is like, you know, don't try to solve a problem with a skill set that you've never done as later in your career. Solving a problem with a skill set you've never explored before can be dangerous. But earlier on, I think that you should be trying everything. You never know what's going to fascinate you. You should just be a vacuum for like different things and styles and what have you. And you know, your career is long and will have many opportunities to decide if you want to pursue certain things or not.
Mm.
And especially, yeah, junior designer in a studio, like your job is not to come in with a strong point of view about how things should look before there's even a brief. So versatility.
Yeah.
I would say, okay, so if you're developing a personal style, I would say consider your personal style as creating appropriate, beautiful, well-crafted solutions.
There we have it.
That's a much more useful skill set.
Yeah. He also asks here, what has more weight when determining someone's hireability, years of working experience or demonstrating skill level in a portfolio?
They're both important.
Mm-hmm.
For different reasons. I mean, obviously, like if you have a like 10 years of experience and your portfolio is shite, that's not good. At all. So like we said, like a good portfolio will get you in the door. It's like your demonstration that you know how to do things. I think that the thing about, and you can accelerate, like some people are, some people, you know, have their talent allows them to accelerate faster than others, but there is an inescapable value to experience that I think, and I think this comes from not misunderstanding, but maybe just like earlier perspective of design, that creating something that's visually arresting is the only thing that's important.
Mm.
And so I think it comes down, at the heart of it is this idea that, a lot of younger or greener designers confuse doing something once or doing something a few times with being experienced at it. And those are two different things. Being experienced at something means having done it a lot of times and honed your instinct and your craft and your ability to do it. You might have done it once or twice and done it really well. That doesn't make you an expert. And so I would say there's like a sort of hard to define wisdom that comes from experience. And so if you're talented and you have experience, that makes you amazing. To kind of explain maybe a little bit more what experience means, or what I was saying about like outside of creating something visually beautiful, there's the things we talked about being appropriate, but there's all the skills in between making something beautiful and making it a real thing in the world, which is like being able to present to clients, build strong arguments, understand business problems, literally presentation skills, understanding how to print something properly and deal with a printer or vendor, get proofs and understand how to set up an artwork, a file for print, how to build a website and code. There's like so many skills in between making something look great in a mock-up in Illustrator and making it an actual real thing and getting it through a complicated organization with all kinds of people who have different opinions. And all that other stuff is where experience lives. And yeah. By the way, it will make you get to better solutions faster as well. So, that's why, you know, a lot of designers will be like, but my portfolio is better than his. How come he's more senior than me? And it's like having a better portfolio than his is a fantastic head start, but there's so many other things that goes into making someone, especially like senior, that just, it's something that talent can't solve for. Like you can be talented at presenting, you can be talented at learning quickly, but it will still take you just practice and time and doing it over and over again to get better at it. And that's it.
Yeah, no, that's fantastic. Colby in New York asks, what is one piece of advice that you'd give to a junior looking to level up to an art director or senior designer role?
I guess I would just say, yeah, I mean, it's very similar to that.
Mm.
Like just, I think ideas, focus on ideas as much as craft, like how does everything have an idea, and show interest in solving problems, work hard, be self-critical and look for opportunities to improve. That's like all internal growth that you can do to make yourself more valuable. And then I think, you know, in the environment of a studio, maybe the single most important thing for me when working with someone is seeing a sense of responsibility for achieving that, the kind of outcome. So there's some designers who are like, I'm a cog in a machine. I've been given this task and I do the task I've been given. And when I'm done with that task, if it wasn't right, that's your fault for not giving me the right brief. Or it's just like, well, I didn't solve it in time. And so that's that. And then there's another mentality, which is like, okay, the problem we're trying to solve for the client is this, and I'm going to do whatever I can to figure out how to solve that problem. Like I will take responsibility for the solution being right and not just for doing stuff in the amount of time that I'm at work.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a totally different mentality, and that makes someone super valuable. And I've talked about this with the designers I work with as well. It's like everything is your job. Never be like, I didn't do that because I didn't think it was my job. Like you can talk to someone and say, hey, I haven't done this. Is like, would you be able to handle this? Is this something that you can help me with? How might I go about doing this? Who's responsible for this? Should I try to take a crack at solving this? Like everything is your job in the sense that The more leadership is essentially about taking responsibility for things. And the more things you're willing to take responsibility for, like that is huge. Getting it done, getting the deck, like you're like, I've done my design, but the deck hasn't been built yet because this person is busy and whatever. Okay, I'm going to set up an InDesign file. I'm going to start putting my work in there. I'm going to put bullet points on the slide. Like there's no rules to where you can't try to add value. And the more you try to add value, the more responsibility you take for like different things that have to happen, the better. Like I remember when I like the second day of my first job, second job. And I was like super young. And I like entered the design studio and I saw that we had a bunch of paper samples, but there were a few companies that we didn't have paper samples for. And so I just asked my boss, shall I like contact these paper companies and see if we can get the sample books or have the reps come by and talk us through the work? And he was like, sure, if you want to. And I just started taking meetings with things. And in retrospect, I'm like super cringy about it because these people with suitcases of paper would come in and they were like 45 and I was like 20. And I was like, show me your paper. And I had no fucking idea what I was doing. I was just trying to get the paper samples because I was interested in trying to be helpful. But, you know, he told me later that he was like, or maybe someone else told me later, he was like, that was like a really impressive moment because I just made it my responsibility to do something. And no one asked me to do that. And so, sorry, I'm not trying to, I sound like a full of myself for ordering paper samples, but I'm just trying to give an example of like, you know, spot opportunities to be valuable.
Is that
the question again? I totally lost myself.
We're talking about kind of like how to get yourself from, you know, that kind of junior and working your way through to, you know, maybe a senior position. But, you know, I think you've hit the nail on the head with just being, you know, taking initiative with some of those things and not always expecting someone else to do it. It goes beyond what your quote unquote job title is.
Yeah. I guess it boiling it down, it's like you're there to solve problems, not create more work. And so look at your day and be like, how did I solve things for the people around me and not like create more things for them to do? And that's pretty much it. That's the litmus test.
She also asked, what kind of attributes are you looking for in a junior designer or an intern?
I mean, it's all that stuff, like, you know, thirst to learn, self-initiation. I mean, just like thirst to learn. And like, it's a really delicate dance, I think, especially when you're an intern. I think it's quite hard, actually. It's like, you don't want to be annoying to that point of like solving problems. Like if you're walking up to someone every 3 hours being like, I need a new task, like that's kind of annoying and it's not super helpful. But just like being down to do anything and help out, is amazing. I would say maybe like start every day by writing a list of things you think you should do and then find whoever is like your senior or looking after you and be like, this is what I was thinking about doing with my day. Let me know if this is good or bad. And they can be like, yeah. Okay. This is great. Fantastic. And then you just go away and do your thing and let them talk to you if they need to, or if they, you know, obviously ignore this if you've had different conversations with them, but just like try to like showing the initiative of like, here's what I'm planning to do with my day. Does that make sense to you? Letting them figure that out and then wandering off and doing that and coming back. That's already like light years ahead of most people. Then just being like, how can I help? I'm down for whatever. You need me to Photoshop some shit? So, like, I think my first job was at a post-production studio and I vividly remember Photoshopping power lines out of a style frame for a commercial for a car or something. And I was like, this is it. I fucking made it. You know, just like, and it's, I mean, I think that leads to another point, which is just like, everything is an opportunity to learn. The most mundane project is still an opportunity to get better. Even if you don't think it's going to go in your portfolio, even if you think the client and the opportunity is terrible, still try to make the best of it, because even if it fails, you'll learn something about yourself, what kind of work you want to do, et cetera, et cetera. And so, you know, to that earlier point, like designers' dissatisfaction and ability or belief that things can be better is a superpower. And even if it's photoshopping telephone lines out of a picture, like, do it amazing. You'll learn some shit about the clone stamp or whatever. Like, I'm a clone stamp master these days. I still use a Wacom pen, and it's from that first job. Like, I'm sitting here with my, you know, I can spin it around my finger like this. So it's really impressive.
Yeah.
For those listening,
you're showing that skill off again, aren't you?
Yeah, no, exactly. No one gets to watch me these days. It sucks. Honestly, I'm glad you felt my pain. No, I 100%. I remember, you know, even working at Maud, which is an amazing design studio in Australia, and I owe my boss there so much. And it was a fantastic experience. And there's amazing work on their website if you go look at it. maud.com.au, I believe. Amazing design studio. Sorry. Just have to, you know, respect the people who got you where you are. I remember working on a project for a weight loss company, and I was designing the nutritional labels on the back of powdered weight loss shakes. And I would work until 3 a.m. and then got in the office at 6 a.m. I have never felt more stressed in my life about designing those labels. And in retrospect, it was like, why did I, like, that was crazy. But it's the same thing. I felt responsibility for doing it right. It was an opportunity to learn something. I was getting to do print. I just, you know, like, I had to design type at like 5 point on the back of a pack, and the registration was horrible in the printing process. And it was just like crazy. I was like trying to work with printers who printed this different stuff, you know. But it was like, even though the thing I was working on was not like amazing, all of the lessons I learned in making it amazing became really useful for me in the long run. Like, I learned so much of how to work with printers through that project. And that became really important when I worked on like crazy posters and getting neon prints and doing crazy stuff, you know. Yeah. Everything is a lesson. Anyway, sorry, that's it.
No, it's great. Pandora in New York asks, I'd like to know how to find the balance between designing something timeless against creating something on trend.
it's kind of hard because, okay, let's start here. Creating something on trend is essentially judging the appropriateness of the solution by external, like elements outside of the brief. Like, you're looking at something and saying, this is cool because I saw this work on a bunch of other work. And so by now, listening to me, you should recognize that, you know, I would not call that appropriate design. You should be judging the success of your timelessness, or as close to it as possible, because nothing's timeless, comes from solving the problem in an appropriate way that is authentic to the company and the context and the brief you've been given. I guess the sticking part of this and you know, avoiding being like an on-trend designer comes from like having diverse inputs, all the things we've talked about earlier, like try not to just look at the same blog everyone else is looking at, all that kind of stuff. I think the sticking point to this is that point of like nothing is timeless. I think that the reality is it's kind of like a 75-25 split really between like timelessness and on trend, because you can't escape the context that we live in. And often making something that feels not just appropriate to the brief, but appropriate to the cultural moment in which it lives in is part of success as well. So I think, you know, obviously, like if you like, think of it this way, if like, I don't know, FedEx or something redesign themselves with like a weird scroll background and a like a Edwardian illustration system or something, you'd be like, that's fucking random because it doesn't fit our time. And so I think there's like, I think that's part of it, is like, you can't, like, things should feel like they live within the cultural zeitgeist that and the context that the client lives in. But within that box, you should strive for a solution that is more motivated by the brief than motivated by what you've seen out there recently.
Yeah, because that's stuff that you see on Dribbble, Behance, you know, Pinterest, whatever, you know, that algorithm's going to change in a couple of weeks. And you're like, now
what? Yeah, I think, and I mean, you know, think about previous decades and the history of design and how you have all these movements of design. And now it's just like everything and what's on trend is constantly changing it in the heartbeat. A lot of that is, or I believe, is because all those people just like were doing things themselves in little bubbles and exploring styles. And then those styles were really amazing because they were kind of unique and different to other people. So they, you know, they like, and now that if everyone's looking at the same things, like that doesn't happen so much anymore. And so that experience you have when you see someone else's work that's really new and novel, if you just copy that work, like you're not gonna, like you can iterate on it, but you can't iterate your way to a paradigm shift mostly. And so, you know, if you're looking for something that's like really gonna stand out and be interesting and that everyone else is gonna copy, then you need to kind of find a unique reference point and you need to really, you know, have those ideas and use the brief as a springboard for the right solution and not just you look at an opportunity or a brief as an opportunity to take something you saw someone else do and do it your way. Or at least if you're going to do that, that should be a stepping stone to something else. I say that because, like, you know, I still do this. You go out and find a bunch of reference and you're like, oh, I like these ideas in this reference. And you start there. You like create something that kind of looks like something else you saw. I don't think there's any shame in doing that. That helps you just get over like blank page syndrome. But that should be a stepping stone to get somewhere else. So then you start playing with it and saying, well, what if I did this? What if I crashed these two ideas together? What blah, 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 blah. And you just keep playing with that until it turns into something new. If you're looking at the piece of work you did and the reference and they look too close, then you need to go further.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. There's no like totally net new thing. I think maybe like when AR technology is popular and we have like 3D shapes floating in the real world, like that will be an opportunity that technology creates to create whole new visual languages. But for now, like you're not going to make something that no one's ever seen before. But you can find an interesting combination that's appropriate and challenging to the conventions of that category and what have you.
Yeah, no, that's fantastic. David in New York asked, he says that he feels nervous about turning around work so quickly within a studio environment. And he says that I work tirelessly on my designs until I'm satisfied, even if I spend more time than planned on the project. When I get to the end of the project, I realize that my solution was much more straightforward than expected. How do I reach this conclusion faster?
Did he say, I work tirelessly until I'm satisfied? What a liar. Yeah. Satisfied. Nobody's satisfied. We've covered this already, David. How dare you ask such a... No. I mean, it sounds like you're on the right path, honestly. Like that just sounds like my first 5 years in design, just like working tirelessly on shit until it made sense and then looking at it and being like, this feels too simple and why didn't I get... okay, so getting there faster, I think that is just, again, that's experience. That's like the more times you do this stuff, the sharper your instinct becomes, the more versions of things you've explored and the more confidently you can mentally say, oh, I've tried that before on all these projects and I don't think that it didn't work then. And so I'm pretty sure it won't work now. And so I'm not going to waste my time doing it. And that's about sharpening your instinct. And that's just comes down to experience. And then there's just like mechanical skill as well. It's just like, you will just improve with the tools and making things. And so you'll get faster there. But that's pretty much it. It's like, again, it's not a magic bullet. I'm not going to say like, start with five directions and then work for half an hour and kill four of them and you're done. You know, it's just experience. And that's what we were talking about earlier. Just like developing your, the more times you've done it, the better you'll get and the smoother you'll get at doing it. But I think that what he's talking about, like, you know, I work tirelessly and just keep noodling with it and spending way more hours than I planned, like that's normal. And not only is that normal, I don't want to promote people like burning themselves out and stuff like that. But that to me signals a sense of dissatisfaction and all the themes that we've been talking about, just like wanting to make sure that the thing that you've made is right by exploring all the possible other outcomes and saying, okay, I did everything I could think of and none of those things are right. And this thing is right. So that must be right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I remember in, sorry, I know I'm just, I love to babble. So I remember in, the one thing I will say is I remember in my university, they showed this study that they had done on the difference between experienced and inexperienced designers. And they said that inexperienced designers will have a bunch of ideas, but they'll latch onto one really quickly and just like keep trying to make that work for a really long time. Experienced designers will tend to do a lot of things and push them a little bit further than the inexperienced designer will, like probably to like 50 to 75% done. They'll just do a lot of things. And part of that is because they have the mechanical skill to do more things quickly. And so they can do that, but they'll do more things before they pick the one thing that they think is right and then focus on that thing. And I think there's an interesting insight in that, which is, you know, the experienced designers are looking for the right idea and they need to do a bunch of things to figure out whether the right idea and the right visual articulation marry themselves correctly. Inexperienced designers are just trying to make the visual component work and spending a lot of time there.
So,
I guess the one piece of advice I would say is do more. I mean, it sounds like he's doing it right. Do more things and take them further and then look at them all in a row and try to assess which one feels right.
Which
sounds like the process.
Yeah. And I think, you know, in looking over all of these questions and kind of what you're touching on, it's like, this is a normal part of the design life. Like if you are feeling these things that we've kind of like touched on, welcome to design.
Well, yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. 100%. I think that's totally right. And I think that, you know, what we're talking about, there's no quick fix. There's no like tricks to suddenly leapfrogging yourself ahead of anyone else. I will say being talented is absolutely fantastic. I think hard work beats talent every time. Being talented and hardworking is like the ultimate. And there's a few designers that I've met in my life who have that. And it's just like insane watching them like be amazing. Like, I'm going to shout out a friend and colleague of mine. His name's Leo Porto. And he started at Collins like 5 years ago. And he came in doing all the things we talked about. Amazing portfolio, could describe why he'd done things. He'd picked projects in his portfolio that were not like easy things to solve. Like most, like he had a museum in his portfolio and most designers do a museum because that's really easy to do. Like it's hard to do a museum identity and not make it look bad. Mm-hmm. But he'd also picked things that were like way harder to solve and done really great jobs with those. And that, so that, and he could talk about why. And so that was like, okay, this guy's talented, visually smart. He worked till like just the hardest working person I've ever met in my life. And so just watching him like improve at an exponential rate was crazy. He got to design director at Collins at record pace, then left and started his own studio with his husband called Porto Rocha. And within like a year and a half, those guys are doing like fucking Airbnb projects and Apple. And it's just like, they're insane.
Yeah.
And that's what, those are the people who have talent and hard work. I think I have hard work and a little bit of talent and that got me a long way. So I would say, you know, for people who felt like me starting design where it's like, I didn't really expect to get into this. I was never like a good illustrator. No one called me artistically talented before I got into design, but I just put my head down and kept at it. And that will beat talent hands down every time. So, you know, there's hope for us all. But yes, as you say, this is all part of it. You're going to be doing this for the rest of your fucking life, probably, unless you change careers. There's no rush. Just like allow yourself to get lost in the process of whatever you're doing and enjoy it and try to improve. And you'll answer all this stuff in time.
Yeah, definitely. Again, thank you so much for your time, your insight. It's been absolutely incredible to kind of hear from you a little bit of background and all of this advice I know is going to go a long way with helping designers out there today. So again, thanks so much for your time. Really appreciate it.
Oh man, absolute pleasure. It's been great. It's great to stand here and pretend like I'm some kind of like fucking dictionary of success. No, thank you for the opportunity. I hope everyone got what they wanted, and I hope you all stick around because there's plenty of opportunity to keep pushing design forward. And in this world where things are getting more and more complicated, brands need to do more and more things at a faster and faster pace. Never has design been more necessary or more desired. Like, our biggest problem at Collins is finding talented people. It's just crazy. Like, all over the world, there's just not enough designers for the amount of design that needs doing, and doing at a high quality. So, if you can make yourself indispensable and all the things we talked about today, you have a rich, both culturally and, in other ways, kind of like career ahead of you. So,
yeah.
Get cracking
on it. Again, thanks so much for your time, man. We'll catch up soon.
Yeah. Pleasure. Talk to you soon.
See you, mate.
The Pathfinder podcast has been brought to you by Shillington, the original graphic design bootcamp. To learn more about the podcast and Shillington, click the link in the bio. Show your support by subscribing and rating us on your preferred podcast platform. Original music composed and performed by Menakshi. Thanks for listening.